Call order to council meeting for February 12th. Everyone would stand and pledge.
The United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Remain standing for prayer.
Dear Lord, bless the decisions of this body. Guide us tonight and in the future as well. Amen.
We have roll call.
Scott Brown.
Here.
Ken Westfall.
Here.
Blaine Chapman.
Here.
Brian Grove.
Here.
Dan Revlon.
Here.
Shelley Rose.
Here.
Tim Salters.
Here.
Mary Oakham.
Here. Adoption of the agenda.
Motion to adopt the agenda.
Second. Motion by President Brown, second by Vice President Westfall to adopt the agenda as presented.
I think Ellen.
Yeah, we're going to put Ellen on there.
Did you put Ellen on?
Yeah.
We'll just add her under miscellaneous.
Miscellaneous.
Question? Question again?
Adopt the agenda.
Oh, that question.
Yeah. You start out with, and then you ask them.
I thought you were asking about her. Sorry. Scott Brown.
Here.
Ken Westfall.
Yes.
It's going to be one of those nights.
Yes.
Blaine Chapman. Brian Grove.
Yes.
Dan Revlon.
Yes.
Shelley Rose.
Here.
Tim Salters.
Yep.
And the agenda is adopted by vote of 7-0. Approval of minutes, and do we not have the February 5th minutes?
They're not on there.
They were on the non-revised.
Yeah. I don't have a copy, but.
Okay.
Do you guys have both? 22nd.
Postpone it.
Or just, if you guys have them.
Yeah.
So it's the January 22nd, February 5th minutes. The motion.
Motion to accept February 5th.
The January 22nd.
The January 22nd.
Second. Motion by President Brown, second by Vice President Westfall to accept the minutes for January 22nd and February 5th as presented.
Question.
Scott Brown.
Yes.
Ken Westfall.
Yes.
Blaine Chapman.
Yes.
Brian Grove.
Yes.
Dan Revlon.
Yes.
Shelley Rose.
Yes.
Tim Salters.
Yes.
Okay, minutes are approved by vote of 7-0. Petitions, memorials, or monstrances? And then we'll go to committee chair report. Report of city officers. You had a public hearing the last.
I didn't think you had a public hearing last.
Except for this time. Okay. So we will suspend the, do we need a motion to do that?
No, it's just temporarily adjourned to conduct a public hearing and then reconvene as the day again.
We will temporarily adjourn. You can call your public hearing.
Public hearing for SHOT North America for tax abatement on new manufacturing equipment. First reading was on January 22nd, 2018. Anybody that would like to speak for or against, please come to the podium and state your name. With that, public hearing is adjourned.
Okay, we'll go ahead back into our regular meeting. First up is SHOT North America Incorporated, tax abatement petition on new manufacturing equipment.
Good
You guys read the reading on January 22nd. And it should have been this way. You want to bet?
Are you ready?
Yes.
Oh.
Remember, motion for second reading?
First reading.
Probably read it first time.
Yes. Yes, should be second reading.
This is first reading?
First reading on January 22nd.
First reading on January 22nd. Yeah, this is second.
But.
First reading on the resolution.
Yeah, we did three readings because we decided after conferring with prior President Rose that we should do a public hearing because it was our female intuition. Prior President.
So.
I have no authority to countermand that.
So we have discussion and pass this on.
Yeah, you make a motion to reapprove resolution 2018.
Need a motion to read and approve resolution.
Motion to approve resolution 1-2018.
Second.
We're 2, 3, and 4.
That's 2, 3, and 4.
Okay.
Do you want Charlie to be in charge?
Yeah.
So, your motion is to approve resolutions 2, 3, and approve 2, 3, and 4.
Yes.
Second.
Resolutions, I'm going to read these together, 2, 3, and 4, 2018 resolution approving tax abatement for the new equipment for Schott Gemco, containing sections 1 through 5, first reading is judicial of the regular meeting.
Discussion?
Do you want discussion for me?
You guys want to hear from me?
No. For 3, an auto loader, furnace upgrades, and equipment. That's the only difference there in the title. And the price.
Call for a question.
Shelley Rose?
Yes.
Tim Salters?
Yes.
Jim Westfall?
Yes.
Scott Brown?
Yes.
Dwayne Rowe?
Yes.
Dwayne Chapman?
Yes.
Dan Rabelais?
Yes.
And resolutions 2, 3, and 4, 2018 passed by a vote of 7-0.
And Sharon has the documents. You can sign them later. We need all 3 resolutions signed as well as the statement of benefits, and then we'll file them in the courthouse and with her in the morning. And we've also filed our affidavit of publication with Sharon.
Okay, thank you. Next is revised Pantheon Theater project. Has everybody had a chance to read that?
Yeah, this is what we discussed at the last meeting.
Do they need to just make a motion to approve this or do they agree?
Yeah, look, if the changes are satisfactory, we give this problem in the number 5 to pass it and we'll send it back to the county, the county attorney. All that route, and then the county council and the county commissioners who've all seen this, so this might be the final draft.
And the big thing, like the requesting you made the change, and then there were some clarifications on the clerk treasurer.
Right, having a
their position,
having right. 2 fiscal people there, we thought it was a good idea to kind of designate who did what, collect money, rates checks, and the auditor with the minutes and advertising. Things like that at the meetings. That board would function just like this, or the county commissioners, or the county council, as far as the board secretary.
Okay, so what's our next step? To let the county review it, see if they agree, and then both bodies are all 3 adopted, or do we?
whatever you want to do, you can...
We'd adopt this, but then if they don't agree, then it'll come back.
Then it would be revised again. So somebody's got to go first.
Motion by Councilwoman Rose, second by Vice President Westfall, to approve the revised interlocal agreement.
Being designated as Resolution 5, 2018, Vincennes Common Council, Vincennes Board of Works and Public Safety, Knox County Board of Commissioners, Knox County Council, and creating a five-person board to operate the Pantheon Theater business project containing seven sections, 1 through 7. And if this is approved tonight, I'll submit it to the County Commissioner, Council, and Council, County Council, for their review and approval.
Okay. Good discussion.
Call for question.
Scott Brown?
Yes.
Ryan Grove?
Yes.
Wayne Chapman?
Yes.
Dan Ravalet?
Yes.
Tim Salters?
Yes.
Shirley Rose?
Yes.
Jim Westfall?
Yes.
And Resolution 5, 2018 passes by a vote of 7-0. New business, Lisa Ice Jones Grousing Foundation.
First of all, I want to thank you for allowing me to go to council this evening on behalf of the Grousing Foundation. I'm Maisie Kendrick, there. I've been there for 4 years now. I also address you as a daughter of the American Revolution. My patriot fought with George Rogers Clark in the capture of Fort Sackville, which I learned when I became a member of the Daughters. And the Grousing Foundation feels that the legacy that the Harrison House has to offer is very important to not only preserve the history that's here, but also the future, embrace the future. We have over 13,000 visitors per year at Grousing. 3,000 to 4,000 of those are fourth grade elementary students that study Indiana history. A lot of them come back with their families. A lot of them come back in years gone by to reminisce about the visit that they made there. So we feel like what Grousing has to offer is not only important for the Harrison legacy, but also important for the promotion of all of the people that have fought so hard in Vincennes and the surrounding area to keep the house there open and restored and preserved for future generations. So I always tell people now that I'm in there, I've been accused of being a Harrison groupie. I wasn't when I first came there, but I've learned so much about the measure of the man. He was a Christian philosopher, a soulful patriot, a family man, a well-educated genteel of Virginia, the son of a Spiner, and the father of the 23rd president, as well as being the 9th president. The stories and the enrichment that are there just run so deep. The collection that is there, there's a multi-million dollar collection. We still receive artifacts regularly from citizens that have been left things, that have been bequeathed things, that have had things in their collection, and want to find a cherished place for that to be. We most recently received a piece of Harrison campaign china from a man in Iowa, and the Iowa Tribune has done articles about Grousing because of that. We recently sent out our annual appeal letter to let everybody know that we are the number one historic home in Indiana. We have been voted by the Early American Magazine readership as being the number one historic home in Indiana. The American Academy of Architects voted us the number one historic home in Indiana. We're the 25 must-see homes in Indiana, so the list goes on and on. So I wanted everybody, first of all, to know that it's not just about history. I know sometimes people around the area get tired of hearing that Vincennes is a historic town, but I travel regularly now to Madison, Indiana to visit my daughter, which is another historic town, and every town you go through says it's a historic town. It's historic Salem, it's historic Mitchell, it's historic Scottsburg, but nobody has, in terms of the other sites in Indiana, the William Henry Harrison home, son of the signer and 9th president of the United States, right here in the community. So I think that makes us particularly unique. The Jeffers Foundation also found that we were particularly unique. And this is a booklet from the Jeffers Foundation. They are a family foundation dedicated to preservation in the Midwest. They came and started talking to us in 2012. In 2011, we put a brand new roof on Grousing, original wooden shake type roof to secure the mansion for the future. And then after that, the Jeffress Family Foundation started talking to us because they used to only do preservation in Wisconsin. They felt like they had done all suitable projects that were available, wanted us to make application. We did. When we made that application, we knew that we would have to raise money to match. It was going to be a challenge type opportunity. In order to get federal funds, we knew that we had to have a historic structure study because no federal money is available unless you have one of those studies done. Because I always tell everybody, everybody knows that the federal government doesn't waste any money. So they don't give any money out for preservation unless they're sure that you've had a study done by the experts to ensure that their money is well spent. They don't want to give you money and then maybe 20 years later you do something, you undo it or do something different. So we then, at the Grouse Foundation, and Shirley Rose is our board chair, we interviewed, well, we put out a request for proposal to architectural firms across the country. Got a lot of responses, firms from California, Ohio, New York, Virginia, Indiana. We interviewed these preservation experts. We wanted to hire a firm that specialized in preservation. So we decided on Misick, Cohen, Wilson, and Baker. They have offices in Albany, New York, and Williamsburg, Virginia. We chose them because they had done restoration at Madison's Montpelier, Jefferson's Retreat, Poplar Forest, about 60 miles from Monticello. They have offices in Williamsburg. They've done restoration at Jefferson's University of Virginia. They had done other period sites that were more specific to Grouseland and its era. So that's why we selected them. It was a two-year process for them to compile this 412-page document to the tune of $90,000, and we had to raise that. Over a two-year period, they made several week-long on-site visits. They made probes into the construction. They studied the nails. They studied the trusses. They studied everything about the house to date it, to learn more about it, to look at what was original. And one of the best things I felt like they said the whole time they were there was that with offices in Williamsburg, what a lot of people don't realize when they go there for the colonial experience, most of Williamsburg has been recreated. Grouseland is the real deal. It's the original construction. And most things in there have been preserved and restored from the original. There have been a few things that have been updated, but prudent decisions have always been made, the best decisions at the time. But now historic preservation is a buzzword. And there's a lot more information available that wasn't available 52 years ago when the last major restoration was completed from 1966 to 1968. So when people come inside Grouseland and are awed by what is there, and they are every day, just had a call today about some people from Wisconsin that want to come in the springtime. So that happens all the time. We get regional visitors, visitors from all 50 states and international visitors, and they're still wowed by what's there. What they don't know are the kinds of things we know when we're there every day. The mortar needs repaired, things can be made more period specific with better decisions with the information available now than could be done back in the late 1960s. So we can do even better now. And we have such a public following that we think we do a type of restoration to the tune of the project that we have on the table. We think people will be really impressed by that. We think they'll be so curious, they'll want to come and see what the difference is. They'll want to learn about what the changes involve, and we want to keep the public involved in all of that. So the Jeffress Foundation awarded us a $400,000 challenge grant. And what that means is for every dollar they give us, we have to raise two. So when the preservation architects compiled this study, they gave us a trajectory for the next 50 years on how to best restore Grouseland. And we wanted that because we knew our board members were going to attrition on and off, and we knew new people were going to come with new ideas. We wanted a solid plan for how to preserve and restore Grouseland and to go forward. And so that's what this provided. They wanted us to do a $3.5 million project to do everything they thought we should do in here. Now, they outlined everything in here based on what was the most urgent, what was what they called necessary, what was near-term, and what was long-term. So out of that $3.5 million recommendation they gave us, we decided, with the $400 award from the Jeffress Foundation, to do a $1.2 million restoration. Now I'm going to pass out these statements about the project. It's called A Living Legacy for Rousland. And if you look at the, it gives you some back history on Rousland, which I didn't really want to go into because I feel like everybody here probably knows well. It's a National Historic Site and the birthplace of Hoosier hospitality and all of that good stuff. But the next to the last page outlines what the project will involve. What we're really looking at is making the main floor, which we consider the most significant to Harrison's time, the council room, the dining room, the foyer, the staircase that is modeled after George Washington's Mount Vernon. We want the guests to be impressed, and we want them to really be impacted by what they first see, and we want to make that even better. The flooring in there needs to be restored. The flooring's a little modern in the council room and the dining room. We know that there's a floor underneath the one in the council room, so we want to fix all of that. We want to put windows in. All of the windows, the three 12s over 12s, there's 40 windows in the house. We want to put insulated windows in. We want to shore up some of the foundation in the basement. We have a little bit of a water leakage problem there. We want to fix that. We want to make the house more user-friendly. If you've been in there recently, you know the iron gates are still there to keep people from going all the way into the rooms. They get a really good view of the rooms when they go in there. It's a little unfriendly. We'd like to soften that up a little bit and modernize it. We'd like to improve the lighting. We'd like to add more computer equipment. We'd like to be able to give people more virtual tours, that kind of experience. We will change the wall treatments, the draperies, things like that. We have to make the project a little bit sexy because people don't like to contribute to things like HVAC and things they can't see. They want to see a big difference, so that's part of the project. So I'm here today on behalf of the foundation to ask the city council to contemplate or to vote on giving us $100,000 toward that $800,000. We have $200,000 already of personally committed funds by different individuals and organizations. We still have other grant applications out there. We have another $100,000 application that we're going to have a site visit on this Thursday. So we're rolling with this. We're going to continue to do this. We need to raise money for Rousland anyway, regardless. There are some improvements that need to be made there. We need to keep the place in good condition. All of the people that tour presidential sites across the country, it's on their bucket list to tour all of them for a lot of people. And so when they tour the Hermitage and they tour Monticello and Mount Vernon, Lincoln, Springfield, then they come to Rousland. And we have a lot of people say that Rousland's right up there. And it's really, really rewarding to be there and hear people say that. I know that people here locally, it's always been here. They expect it to always be here and stay here, so they don't get maybe as quite as excited as some of our visitors do. I just recently visited Lincoln's Springfield home. That home is nice, but it's famous because of Lincoln Domain. It's not famous because of the house and what the house is. Rousland, because it was built as a fortress, because Harrison envisioned that. It was also a family home. It was the center for the territorial government. There is no presidential site that is the composite of all of that. It's the White House of the West. Harrison was the father of the West and the eagle of the West. We say Rousland's history is America's history. And so when people come here, we can provide all of that right here in this community. So we respectfully ask that you seriously consider that, because what all we think it offers, we know from all the anecdotal stories from our visitors, they shop here, they stay overnight here, they visit all the other sites. We do our part as an economic partner to promote all the other sites. We tell people when they come here, I recently had someone come and say they'd been here as a child, it was cold outside, they thought they could come up from Evansville and be indoors, and I said, we jokingly say, Rousland's a good place to go in the winter because it's a constant 72 degrees in there. And so she said she was going to bring her grandson, and he was a young boy. And I said, well, do you know about the Red Skelton Theater? And what about the George Rogers Clark Memorial? And she said, well, I think it's kind of too cold for that. And I said, oh, no, they've got an auditorium that's just been refurbished. You can go in there and watch the film in the new auditorium. And she said she went to BU. And I said, well, you'll want to drive around in your car and see all the latest that the university has done and see the improvements at Kilmer Park. And so she was real excited to come to town to do all of that. So we think that we are a big piece of that. We know we are a draw to the community for people to come here and spend their money. Thank you.
Are there questions or comments or discussion?
Mr. Mayor, do you have an idea where we could pull the funds from?
Any amount of money like that would have to come out of edit. I know we had $250,000 committed to Stellar this year. They won't be spending it, so.
Your recommendation that we put this up on the board for the next meeting and then come to the board?
I agree. I think this is about as many cents as you can get.
Yeah, I mean, it's not much more many cents than this, right?
Right.
So you want to make a resolution for next meeting to?
Next meeting that we can go on, yeah. Does that work?
Very much brings that.
Yeah.
That's been a wonderful reason. Okay, next meeting we'll have a resolution for you for.
And just remember, we've never asked before. This is $400,000 of Wisconsin money that's coming to Bridgeport. We want to spend it.
We'd like to take that Wisconsin money.
Next meeting, we will have a resolution before you for approval, if everybody can hear. Thanks, Lisa. Next is Tim Trotter with AME.
This is a continuation of talking about Wi-Fi charging stations throughout the city. Mr. Trotter was part of the original group that put it through downtown. He's going to talk to us a little bit about some of the things that we should look for and consider before we make some decisions in this project.
Absolutely. No mics, I'll speak up. Well, thank you for the invite tonight for the talk. Wireless hotspots, charging stations, I'll keep this real brief. A couple years ago, Tower Bridge, the Chamber of Commerce, did an almost exact project down there in town. And we really had a pretty good measure of success. It was used a lot, and it really was. We had metrics and reports that we could pull to see how many people used it, how frequently they used it, all that kind of stuff. And the number of people that used it, we're like, okay, this is something that's beneficial, something that's successful. We should carry on doing this. But there's a but there. I made a short list of things to watch out for, things we would do differently, stuff like that. First off, I did want to say that when I was talking to Tim, when I was looking at my list looks a little negative, and I don't want it to be negative. I would say first off that the free wireless for city parks, Red Park, Chicago Park, for the Riverwalk, I think would be a fabulous addition. In addition to the charging stations, the uptick in mobile usage and internet usage, particularly from young people, is just phenomenal. I have involvement with a wireless ISP, and just the bandwidth that gets used all the time, from streaming video and media services to all the apps that all the young people use. I only use a fraction of them. I'm not quite as young as I used to be, but you know, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, YouTube. A lot of people use Facebook just for live streaming video stuff as much as anything else. You know, buying. There is a demand for it, certainly. I think if we were deploying something, it would be used. Wanted to lay that out. Having said that, when we did it before, and I thought if I read through these and then maybe take a couple of questions and just see what you guys think. A little negative, like I said, but I think it is a good idea. It would be used. Some of the things to watch out for, that in hindsight, you know, we would have known differently. Continuing maintenance and support of said equipment. We would need to look at putting enough money aside to replace equipment that goes bad, to have funds to, you know, pay technicians to go out, fix this stuff, reprogram stuff. The technology for wireless hotspots in particular has matured just a phenomenal amount over the last few years. I don't think it we would even need to concern ourselves too much with the type of technology or some of the common things, you know, how do we stop it being used by people who don't want to use it, and all these things. Those types of concerns have been taken care of as this technology has matured, so I don't worry too much about that stuff. Whichever technology and equipment you use is going to work just fine. Appropriate equipment. In hindsight, we would have put it out to bid. We would have bid it in the same fashion that any other city project would bid. You know, we would have consistent bid specs, we would have all our priorities, requirements, our warranty details, our support options, all that kind of stuff. And we would have the rubric to gauge it all at the end of the bids coming in. The one we did before was a little bit seat of the pants. It was a lot of volunteer work, a lot of volunteer labor, and that's great, but it also has some limitations. A couple of other things to bear in mind real quick, and I mentioned some of them, annual maintenance and support. Technical support. You know, if someone, a member of the public, is going to use this service, and they have issues getting onto it or using it or whatever, who are they going to call? You know, if they're in the parks, it's probably going to land at the news desk. You might not like that. So we would need to address that kind of stuff. Security, patches, updates, their little computers, basically, they need to be maintained and secured and cared for. Who provides the internet service? We have local carriers like Metronet, like New Wave, like AT&T. There's going to be some recurring expenses associated with that. So we need to bear that in mind. And the other thing, most of those are like 2, 3, 4 year contract terms. So as those contracts come up, we're going to want to look for cost savings and even other providers, give them an opportunity. Normal business type stuff. Continuous review of the network. Is it working properly? Are some of them not functioning at all? You know, or some of them channels are wrong? There's any number of things that can go wrong with technology, right? Staying on top of keeping that going. Notifications of outages and issues. Who's going to go out and fix it? How do we know they're fine? Scheduling repairs, provisioning equipment, if it's electrical issues, you know, licensed electricians, someone's familiar with that kind of stuff. My favorite part, management, user management, metrics, reports. If we're going to put it out there and we're going to spend the money on it, we want to be sure that somebody's actually using it. We want to know how many people are using it, what they're using it for, how many new people we have using it, compared to how many people that use it all the time. And maybe they should get their own internet connection, that kind of stuff. That's all I'm talking about. Terms and conditions of use. When we provide this free service, do we want to be policing, or lack of a better term, what people do on it, or do we leave it wide open? We would look at coming up with a list, a policy, terms and conditions that people would need to agree to in order to use the service. Again, none of this is technically difficult at all. This is all mature, it's wonderful. It would really be a policy thing of what we're going to do, what we want to allow. If we do put some filtering policies in place, how do we enforce those? Again, technically it's all there. We're going to have someone who's going to take calls and say, okay, we're going to block inappropriate content. We're going to block adult content. We're going to block these criteria. How do we enforce those? Again, the technology is there, but then you start dealing with false positives. Like, you know, someone wants to go buy something and accidentally gets caught in the filter. How do we address that? How do we unblock that? As far as the physical equipment goes, again, it's really, like I said, it's matured a lot. This stuff's resilient. It will tick along for years and years and years and years and really be pretty maintenance-free. Some of the things that we'll need to address are Now, surge protection, lightning strikes, vandalism, stuff like that, which, you know, it's unfortunate, but it's a problem. And again, that kind of comes under the whole maintenance and continuing operation of a service like this. The other thing, I'm sorry, just trying to keep it brief, we talked about charging stations. Again, mobile devices only power, right? For the most part, charging stations are a really great addition to any, you know, public area. There's a lot of different types and styles of charging stations. Arguably, the most appropriate for our kind of scenario might be in existing seating areas where we have power already, for instance. It wouldn't take a bunch to have, you know, weatherproof cover, USB charging ports, or even just 110 outlets. A lot of that stuff is, you know, it's off-the-shelf stuff anymore. You don't have to go too crazy with it. So I think that is very feasible, particularly in like Patrick Henry, River Wall. We got power, we got enclosures, we got lights. It's very feasible, very doable. Some of the other things, the Riverwalk, for instance, when we have a network set up, it has part of it for public access. If, for instance, we wanted to introduce a measure of security, so, you know, cameras, stuff like that, that we could set up to be monitored from this police station, all of those value adds can leverage this infrastructure. We do a similar thing at the farm market. Got internet down there, we got security cameras down there, same thing at the pocket park. So it is being done in one fashion or another already. Again, overall, I think it would be beneficial. But the downtown part of it, that could be lighter. You know, it really could. I think it would be good to cut our teeth on the other areas where arguably it would be more beneficial. Although a little Wi-Fi down at the Gimbel Corner lot, that would be bad. Patrick Henry. I mean, for all the events and everything that we have down there, Watermelon Festival and stuff like that. First thing, Jonathan, the guy's the original company, calling me up, hey, I'm using the internet, you know, live streaming, asking me things, stuff like that. It would be really special. How to solve all that? Questions? Again, I know some of that was a little bit, gosh, but I really do think it would be a beneficial.
This is catching on in other communities.
It is not. I mean, back when the Chamber of Commerce and Packers did it, you know, it was a little unknown back then. The technology wasn't quite as mature. It worked great. But it's so much easier now, and it's, you know, a lot of places it's expensive. You go somewhere you don't have Wi-Fi for a lot of parents, that's a way to kind of entertain your kids. All that tablets and devices.
Tim, the biggest thing that like you and I have discussed is as a move forward is where's this going to fall under what department or who is going to be specifically responsible for if something happens, or and for maintenance purposes, are we going to go with something in-house, are we going to do something with third party?
That's exactly right.
And those are things that need to be figured out to make sure that this is something that's successful.
You're exactly right. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, particularly the lessons learned, I mean, if we do this, we want it to be successful, we want it to be reliable, and we want it to be maintained. And figuring out those types of things is going to be part of our, you know, initial research and arguably part of the good specs, if that's going to be something we're going to expect from the group that installs. And again, all of this is very doable. It's just things we'll need to decide upon.
How can we get an idea of cost prior to good specs so that we know we're not just seeking, you know, bids on something we don't want nothing?
Right, I
see.
You know what? I think it wouldn't be too out of the question to look at comparable projects that have been done in other communities. And we could look at criteria like area covered, population, stuff like that, and adjust the numbers accordingly to get an idea. But I think that could be a worthwhile investment.
I'm particularly interested in this idea of introducing this and correlating it with security. Like, you have it in a park, could it go with, yes, very expensive playground equipment and so forth, and monitors.
Well, you know, the fact that we even have to think about that, I think it's horribly unfortunate, but it is a fact of life. We can get the missing downtown stuff. That's going to help the police department with the closure of that. It's going to save on their time and resources as well.
And we had talked about starting small, maybe at Greg Park. Mm-hmm.
And actually, Greg Park at Rainbow Beach, part of the facility we built, they actually have another house spot in there. See a lot of use. Actually, Steve, they can get faster than internet. But they paid it out.
One of the nice things, too, we could be as hands-on as we want with this, whether we have someone in-house do it, or like we said, if we set it up third-party, you could almost even set up a call line. Like, if there is an issue,
that's exactly
somebody
right.
can call, and that third-party would deal with it. So, I mean, it's all depending on what we want to do. That's it.
Yeah, exactly, and it comes, a lot of that comes down to, you know, balancing the cost of doing it internally versus outsourcing it. There are plenty of groups out there that what they do is provide outsource support. You would give them, administrative access to your network, and they can do things like help people, you know, troubleshoot even getting on the network in the first place, or if they're slow speeds, or, you know, so looking for outages, stuff like that. Using it, turn them off, throttle them, whatever. You have the option of outsourcing all that. There's a dollar figure attached to it, but you know, there is with doing it internally too. Either way, we have someone to hold accountable for doing it.
That's great park. Pretty good sized park. you already have some access through at the Rainbow Beach. So if we were to expand outward to Rainbow Beach, would you recommend that? My point is do we do all of Greg Park or do we do certain spots? And would it be more feasible to integrate Rainbow Beach in with a spot right there by the shelter house / in the field area,
right,
which would be Rainbow Beach, to limit the cost? And
yeah, I think that would be a fine idea. And for all of the parks, each of the parks is going to have a central, like Greg Park, for instance. Rainbow Beach has it, that's fine. The next, arguably, most logical choice is going to be the center building, the center museum. There's secure areas to put equipment. Not that there's much equipment, but there's secure areas to be power. It's out of the elements. That's a pretty easy install. And you're right, it's not a very long hop or anything, not a very long distance to Greg Park, where we already have internet. That's not taken care of. It's already being paid for. It'll just be a little extra equipment to shoot it out to the shelter house. So I think on a case-by-case basis, you know, you start in the easiest areas and then, you know, expand out there. A lot of them might be looking at it to say, okay, well, you know, in this particular park, you know, kids are congregating mostly around this area, so we're focusing on this one, or we've got playground equipment in this corner. And so we're trying to expand out that one next. I know down at the farmer's market, it's pretty easy. A lot of these areas just tiny.
If we need to be of a certain size to get the number of companies interested, then
Yes, no. Arguably, the larger the company, probably the larger the bid. You gotta have more overhead and income. I think this is certainly something that can be achieved using local resources also. Most smaller team guys around here. And with the option of outsourcing the support, which is probably the biggest headache. That's very realistic. Not sacrifice, you know, for a large company.
Can you off the top of your head think of a comparable value community that is?
Let me do my research and I'll shoot some links out.
Good place to start.
Good?
Anything else?
Thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
Okay, we move on to ordinance 1-2018, additional appropriation for edit for second midlife project in the amount of $21,834.
Motion to read 1-2018.
Second. Motion by President Brown, second by Vice President Westfall to read ordinance 1-2018.
Ordinance 1-2018, additional appropriation ordinance, sections 1 and 2, second midlife project, $21,834.
Discussion.
How many more of these do we have?
And I'm going to suggest, because we'll have a public hearing next meeting, correct? If the city engineer will be here to discuss that,
I'll
wrap it up.
But I mean, we're
close. Yeah, this should be probably one of the final payments.
I was going to say, I think that might be enough to finish up the project, the few little bills that are trickling.
Okay.
Because we had appropriated it all in 2017, but then we have a couple more bills coming in and we haven't spent all that. So I think in Sharon, isn't this basically still what was left from what we originally appropriated? So this isn't any additional money, we already appropriated it. Just bookkeeping here.
And he can give her, give us a.
Question.
Brian Groves.
Yes.
Wayne Chapman.
Yes.
Dan Ravelant.
Yes.
Shirley Rose.
Yes.
Tim Salters.
Yes.
Jim Westfall.
Yes.
Scott Brown.
Yes.
First reading of ordinance 1-2018 passes by a vote of 7-0. Next is ordinance 2-2018, additional appropriation for rainy day, ADA compliance in amount of $256,207, and comprehensive plan amount of $22,927.
Motion to read ordinance 2-2018.
Second. Motion by President Brown, second by Vice President Westfall to read ordinance 2-2018.
Ordinance 2-2018, additional appropriation ordinance, sections 1 and 2, from rainy day, $256,207, from edit, $22,927.
Okay, discussion.
Scott Brown.
Yes.
Brian Groves.
Yes.
Wayne Chapman.
Yes.
Dan Ravelet.
Yes.
Shirley Rose.
Yes.
Tim Salters.
Yes.
Jim Westfall.
Yes.
And first reading of ordinance 2-2018 passes by a vote of 7-0. Next is ordinance 3-2018, additional appropriation for edit, beautiful preservation in the amount of $27,000.
Motion to read ordinance 3-2018.
Second. Motion by President Brown, second by Vice President Westfall, to have first reading of ordinance 3-2018.
Ordinance 3-2018, additional appropriation ordinance, sections 1 and 2, $27,000 from edit, fancy and theater preservation.
Discussion. This was your special meeting that you agreed to support the grant that the county was applying for, and our amount was $27,000 for the match.
Question.
Jim Westfall.
Yes.
Scott Brown.
Yes.
Brian Groves.
Yes.
Wayne Chapman.
Yes.
Dan Ravelet.
Yes.
Shirley Rose.
Yes.
Tim Salters.
Yes.
First reading of ordinance 3-2018 passes by a vote of 7-0. Next is resolution 7-2018, transfer from general fund amount of $90,000 and from edit fund to general in the amount of $125,000. First was from CCI to general fund, $90,000. Second's edit, general fund, $125,000.
Motion to read resolution 7-2018.
Second.
Motion by President Brown, second by Vice President Westfall, to read and approve resolution 7-2018.
Resolution 7-2018, resolution of the Common Council of the City of Vincennes authorizing transfer from cumulative capital improvement fund, $90,000, from edit, $125,000, to the general fund.
Discussion. Okay, this is recommendations of really financial that I've worked with on the city's budget and stuff that they made that told us that we should look at doing this. So we'll just follow their recommendations.
Tim Salters?
Yes.
Jim Westfall?
Yes.
Scott Brown?
Yes.
Brian Grove?
Yes.
Ray Chapman?
Yes.
Dan Ravalet?
Yes.
Shelley Rose?
Yes.
And resolution 7-2018 passed by a vote of 7-0. Next is claims.
Motion to approve the claims in the amount of $248,678.55.
Could I add something to that?
Yes.
Alan has something to ask. And it's for $225. We could add that on to it.
That's a normal plan.
Good evening, thank you. As you remember, the facade grant, each individual property owner wrote the city a check for $500, and they have an individual account set up through Sharon's office. And we've spent $275 of that to pay for title searches. And now I need to record those easements, which will be $25 each. So it's not city money, it's actually property owner's money. I just need for you all to approve that $225 so I can go ahead and take care of recording the easements on each one of those properties.
And that's because all that money's on account at in the city.
Yes, we set them up individually, yes. So the money's already within the city, I just need for you all to
So that changes the amount to $248,903.55.
That's
a motion.
Second.
Got a motion by President Brown, second by Vice President Westfall to pay claims in the amount of $248,903.55.
Scott Brown?
Yes.
Brian Grove?
Yes.
Dan Ravalet?
Yes.
Ray Chapman?
Yes.
Tim Salters?
Yes.
Shelley Rose?
Yes.
Jim Westfall?
Yes.
And by a vote of 7-0, claim to pay.
Thank you.
Nothing else on the miscellaneous? If not, we just need a motion to adjourn.
Mr. Mayor, yes. I know you put together estimates for Station 2, specifically yes. Like everything that they're going there. Is there any way we could kind of expand that and see all the different options that we could possibly have for Station 2, whether, you know, possibly adding a bay on the back, right. Maybe gutting the whole building, just so that we can look and see what's the most
right.
Cost-productive option that we would have for that, because going through that today, I mean, there's a lot of work that we're going to need to put in, so what's the best for us, what's the best for our firemen, what's the best for the city?
Yeah. It's a shame it got into the shape that it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
But we've got to look at either updating this or even considering adding a bay on the back.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're going to look at all options, get prices, and regardless...
Regardless of what we...
Yeah. There's some things that have to be done.
Yeah, I mean, because when you go through that building, I mean, I know that you've been through there, and a lot of us have been. I mean, there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and instead of piecemealing it, this would seem better to kind of get it all done at once. So what's the best option for us, and what's the best price? I mean, if we need to do certain things, then we need to get it done. That's, you know, our responsibility.
Possibly explore purchasing that house next door.
Maybe on the bay.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to look at all options.
Let's put everything on the table.
Mm-hmm. I've got other options I'm going to look at. But we'll look at everything that's out there.
All right. All right. Thank you.
Anything else? If not, need a motion to adjourn?
Hello.